Hello and welcome to this New Year's Resolutions for Your Financial Well-Being discussion sponsored by PSG Wealth. In today's episode, we're going to be exploring the common financial mistakes that South Africans make year after year and how simple habits and disciplined choices can actually replace some of those things for the better. From chasing get-rich-quick schemes and following last year's top-performing stocks to falling into credit card debt cycles and neglecting emergency funds, we unpack the behaviors that quietly erode wealth. Drawing on practical strategies, real-world data, and behavioral finance insights, this discussion highlights how financial success is not just about numbers, it's about cultivating consistent habits, thoughtful decision-making, and a long-term discipline. Whether you're looking to start investing intentionally, break costly spending cycles, or build a reliable safety net, this episode offers actionable guidance to help you make smarter financial choices every single year. Joining us today is Adrian Parsky, is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth, and he's going to be helping us to make sense of what we need to do to make 2026 a financial success. I'm Diwa Gabaza of The Business Day and a Financial Mail. Now, Adrian, it is the first time we get to chat to you in 2026. And we're trying to get the year off on the right note. Please, let's maybe start around the get-rich-quick schemes. We often, you know, hear about, you know, some of these things. Just put a little bit of money here, we can 10x it, or just put your money over there and you can get a quick return. How does chasing get-rich-quick schemes derail South Africans' finances? And what's a disciplined alternative?
Yeah, I think there's really, for me, sort of two variants from that, and from this, and they're both quite destructive. But the one more serious one is, especially where there's operators in the industry claiming to generate big returns over short investment horizons, and that's normally a signal for us that people should be careful. And unfortunately, you know, it's like most scams, you think it's obvious in hindsight that you should have avoided it. But then it's often too late. So I think, you know, as a New Year's resolution, try and avoid those things where they overpromise and things look too good to be true. Unfortunately, creating wealth over the long term is not necessarily the most exciting thing. It's a very rewarding thing over the long term, but it's not necessarily the most exciting thing over the short term. And normally, these providers of, you know, scams and other things tend to position things in a way that they excite people, and they do catch people, unfortunately. So I think that's a really good one to look out for this year. Do not get caught up into the get rich quick schemes. I think the other one, and although this might be not linked to a scam or fraud specifically, but are the things that promise high returns over short periods of time. But this links up with speculative investment. And again, is something that we've spoken about on numerous occasions. And those things can be quite damaging from a wealth building perspective, because obviously, again, investors are lured to things that they think will generate big returns over a short investment period. And they do this routinely year in, year out, only to sort of following the mirages all over the place instead of just having a decent plan in place and using something with a little bit more credibility and a little bit more forecasting surety in terms of what you can do over the long term. And these things are, unfortunately, things like cryptocurrencies have become really big globally. But be careful of these things that don't necessarily guarantee good long-term outcomes.
Adrian, maybe just as a quick follow-up, you know, to what we're saying, it's something that I've heard in, you know, some of the corners that in many instances, when it comes to especially the get-rich-quick schemes, because there's so much going on in the world, you brought up, you know, things like crypto. In many people's eyes, you know, a lot of people that are making it, a lot of people that have, you know, found riches, have found treasure in the world, almost feel like they either had a lot of luck that came their way, or they were able to, you know, scam their way. And there seems to be this almost an idea in some corners that, oh, well, if, you know, some people are being able to get rich in that way. Why can't I also have my day in the sun?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. But I think maybe something, you know, a practical example that speaks to this is the broader concept of Ponzi schemes as well. And we've got history of big blowups, especially offshore, if you think of the Madoff case, for example. And it's just some investors tend to have a good experience, and then the scheme starts to lure in more investors because people don't want to miss out. But ultimately, it doesn't end well. And, you know, I think, again, if you've got a qualified wealth manager with a bit of experience, there are definitely things that you can look out for, things that tend to go up at a rate higher than equity returns, long-term equity returns, in a fairly linear fashion without any volatility. That's definitely something that you need to be careful of, or areas of the market where people are reluctant to clearly articulate how they generate the return or what exactly they're investing in to get those returns. So you get those kind of tells where people can see that there's maybe something that is not 100% right. But like I said, unfortunately, investors are lured into these things in the fear of missing out.
If we then move on then, Adrian, to people that are playing in the markets, we've addressed some of the issues around your get-rich-quick schemes, some of the mentalities and some of the ways in which we see that fear of missing out, missing the boat, influencing that behavior. But for people that are playing in the market, why does following performance ruin SA investors yearly? And how does one go about picking winners smartly?
Yeah, I think there's actually, you know, especially, you know, working in the financial environment, you know, you tend to look at these things and think, how can people behave it this way? It seems so obvious that things won't end well. But I think it in reality, on the ground, things are a bit more complicated, because investments build credibility through their performance. But I think it's really important to look at longer term performance. I mean, even for us, where we look at companies and how they perform and how they are managed, or whether it's fund managers and how they've performed, we also look at performance, but we see it in context of a long-term journey. And we try to ascertain how reliable the manager is given the historic performance, and whether the skill is still there, for example. And the same with the business. How reliable is this business model? So we're asking fundamental questions by finding clues in historic performance. But that's very different to looking at the last 12 months and saying, oh, wow, this thing is doing so well. I definitely need to participate. You know, it's one of those things that can be very dangerous. It's just extrapolating the recent past. So I think that gray area that starts to develop by thinking short-term versus long-term is where the trap sits. So, yeah, following performance can be a very dangerous thing. And I think maybe more accurately, I should say following short-term performance can be a very dangerous thing. Ask yourself, how reliable is this asset I'm investing in? Granted, it may have done well over the last year or two even, but think maybe over the last 10, 20 or 30 years, what is this asset's ability to actually reliably generate a return for me? And I think that just having that discipline in place in terms of the way you think about this historic performance could be useful.
Yeah, it could certainly be useful. And hopefully, I think you and I have had those conversations time and time again about the fact that in many instances, the long-term view is probably the best. But chasing some of these, you know, short-term horizons tends to be to the detriment of people. So we've looked at the get-rich-quick schemes. We've looked at some of the pitfalls around following performance in the market. If we shift our attention to the way in which people spend, the way that people are actually funding either their lifestyles, their expenses, households, how do credit card debt cycles repeat yearly? And what's a debt-free discipline, you know, that you could perhaps encourage or advise for South Africans?
You know, I think a debt can be, you know, a really powerful thing. It can provide access to funding to things that wouldn't be affordable otherwise, like a home or a car, which are things that people need in order to live their lives and raise families. But at the same time, if debt is not managed properly, it can be quite detrimental. And to be fair, we it's not just retail investors. I mean, we see governments do this, and we've spoken about this before. It's just where the debt becomes so much that you then have to incur more debt just to pay off the preceding debt. And so the debt cycle continues. So I think it's really important to think carefully about where you incur any debt, whether you really need to go this route, and whether you can genuinely afford to pay it and when. Because if you can't answer those fundamental questions, you end up into this open-ended agreement with the debt cycle, and things just start to balloon. And before you know it, you've got a really big problem. And that's typically how people land themselves into very serious debt problems. But I think, you know, I think a lot of those seeds are sown, especially at this time of the year. I mean, everybody routinely complains about how long the month is in January, given that most people were paid a little bit earlier in December for the holidays, and now you're struggling to make ends meet, and you reach out for a credit card or maybe two or three. And so the year starts, and you know, if there's no clear plan for how you're going to recover it or when, it becomes a problem. So especially this time of the year, it's important to think about how you manage your finances. Don't reach for that credit card. If you can avoid it, avoid it. And if you have to incur some debt, be honest with yourself and say, well, you know, realistically, I can pay back X over X amount of months, and then, you know, the problem will be solved. But it should be actually a very uncomfortable position to be in. You know, being in debt shouldn't be something that you're living a lavish lifestyle. It's actually quite comfortable. You don't even notice the debt. You know, debt is something that should make people very uncomfortable, that you are actually putting yourself at risk, and you don't want to be in that position. You want to work yourself out of that position as quickly as possible. You realize that there are risks involved with debt if you use it incorrectly. So I think, yeah, like I say, especially now, very important. Think about how you spend money at the moment. We know it's a tough time, but you know, it's also a very good time to tighten the belt a little bit. And then looking at the year forward is maybe even devise a plan as to say, well, I still have my debts from last year. So how can I not incur just new debt this year? How can I maybe tackle some of that debt last year? If I had three credit cards, maybe I can consolidate it into one at more preferential rates or payment periods or whatever the case may be. And how will I then slowly but surely pay off this credit card debt? Again, I think a really good New Year's resolution financially to say, I want to get myself out of a position where I've got debt on credit cards or clothing stores or those kind of things. Rather stay clear of that.
Maybe just a quick one, Adrian. I was just listening to you talking and the different things that you're advising, such as if you can, don't take out the credit card. Be honest with yourself. You know, if you do take out debt, about what you can actually manage, and actually, you know, it has to be a discomfort, right? You can't just be living lavishly. But one of the things I was just thinking about, some of the pervasive attitudes and advice we often hear swirling around. Some people saying, "Oh, well." You mentioned earlier on the car and the house, and you often hear some people saying that, well, you can increase your chances of getting access to especially home finance if you have a line of credit, right? In certain corners, some people see it as, can I call it a necessary evil, you know, to get the debt that they actually need and want in their lives. How do we make sure that we're actually balancing those things? And how do you actually take in what's signal versus noise, basically? Because some people are being told, you know, that, no, you must have a line of credit for you to then qualify for these other things that are happening out there, as opposed to just creating this debt spiral.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a good point that you make. And I think my take on it is, if you do incur monthly credit debt just through normal spending and, you know, having a coffee somewhere or this or that, I think it's just about still living within your means, because you can still incur that credit on a card for the month, but it's actually an ongoing expense that you should be paying off on a monthly basis. And that will still contribute to you building a good credit profile over time, because it shows, yes, you do use credit, but you do pay it off monthly, which means that you use credit responsibly, which is really what the banks are looking for, is, are you responsible with your debts? If you go into a situation where you want a credit card to illustrate that you are good with credit and you want a home loan eventually and you want a good credit score, the worst thing that you can do is get the credit card but not be in a position where you manage that carefully, because then you actually build a poor credit score, which is obviously worse than having no credit score at all. So I think maybe that's the right way to approach it. Just again saying, you know, whatever goes on the credit card, I understand that I need to be able to pay it off, and I've got a plan for when I need to pay it off. If it's small things on a daily basis and you can manage to cover that at the end of the month, then that's great. If it's bigger things, you need to think carefully, because you might just end up ruining your credit score if you can't honor those debts.
Most certainly. Now, let's turn our attention to another conversation that you and I have had, but this one is probably, you know, one of those things that foundationally people just need to have in place. Why do South Africans neglect emergency funds, you know, every January? And how can people actually enforce a no buffer habit?
Yeah, I think there's definitely two schools of thoughts around it. And I think both arguments have some credibility in terms of or validity. Is yes, we do have an affordability issue. You know, South Africa on a GDP per capita basis is not a wealthy country. People don't have masses of access to build these big pools of emergency funds. I completely understand that. But on the other side, so much can be accomplished with just small moves over time in the right direction. And I think sometimes people also think they need to save masses of amounts every month to get to a retirement saving or for emergency saving that is substantial. And it actually just starts with small regular contributions over time. But again, it sort of links up to the previous point on debt. You know, you can't have an emergency fund if you still have a lot of debt. So you need to get yourself into a position where you can build an emergency fund first. So focus on the debts. Next, we look at emergency funding. Say that I'm going to put, you know, X amount away every month into my emergency fund. And I can promise you, we see it all the time. People are absolutely amazed at how much they can save that way. Because before you know, we know how quickly the years pass every year. And before you know it, there's been 30 months that's passed. And now all of a sudden, there's a half decent amount of money in that account that you put into emergency funding. And it just managed to build up over time. So don't underestimate the power of just small little improvements in the right direction every month.
And tied to this issue of, you know, saving, and especially a little every month, is the issue of retirement, right? Because when it comes to retirement planning, it's basically a saving and investing type of discussion. And perhaps that's where we can end off the discussion, is to say, why is retirement planning ignored until it's too late in South Africa? And what are some of the things that can be done, I guess, in addition to what you said just now, to make it a daily well-being type of habit?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I just listen to our conversation, it almost feels like there's a sequence of hurdles that people need to go through. Like, first, you need to sort your debt. Then you need to focus on near-term emergency funds. And then if you've got that, then you can think about retirement planning and those things and saving long-term. So very difficult for a person that hasn't even settled their debt, or even if they've managed to do that, but they don't even have short-term emergency funds, to talk about retirement planning. So I'm not surprised that so few people can actually afford to retire, because it's like the third hurdle of the ones that we've discussed now already, and there would be more on a wealth creation journey. So it's almost like the odds are positioned against you if you don't have these disciplines that we've spoken about now. But for me, I think a good way to sort of tie it all together is to sit with a financial planner, work on a budget, talk about what's the plan for getting rid of debt. What's the plan for working up an emergency fund reserve for the things that come our way over the short term? And how, after I've done that provision, how can I think about my retirement planning to ensure that I can afford to live without an employer's income when I retire one day? And that person will hopefully be qualified to give you a very good plan for combating those three issues, but also some other issues that you might have from a financial perspective, and put some clear plans in place, tell you what the disciplines are, explain what it is that is required to reach the goals you have. And then most importantly, with regular reviews, sort of keep you on track. It's a bit like a personal trainer. You don't just go to the personal trainer and they gave you a plan for a 12-week weight loss and 2 weeks in, you've already sort of deviated. You know, you need to see them weekly and they do a weigh-in with you and they tell you you're on the right track, or, hey, I can see you're taking chances. You need to adjust your behavior a little bit here. And a financial planner operates in the same way over a very long period of time to ensure that you can reach those financial goals.
I think that's a good place for us to end off today's discussion. It has been a great one, just understanding some of the things that people can actually do to make sure that they have a better financial prospects when it comes to 2026, and some of the New Year's resolution that can help to ensure one's financial well-being. Starting off talking about some of the things around get-rich-quick schemes and some of the psychology around that, why people get into such things, some of the structural issues. At the end of the day, everyone is just trying to put food on the table, and the cost of living is quite high. But in that, you know, you do have those that are taking advantage, you know, of people promising them, you know, high returns. And at the same time, you do have people that are disillusioned looking at, you know, certain people's success. You know, that doesn't look like it's fair. And, you know, simply saying, how can I also, you know, get my chance to eat at the trough? So all of that fighting and taking away from consumer pockets. Also talking about, you know, for those that are investing, how do you have a longer term view, this issue around following performance, because you've got those perhaps the short term wins. And, you know, how do you not allow some of those things to influence, you know, your long term thinking, getting into chats around credit card debt cycles, how people can actually engender a better savings culture and spending culture amongst themselves. You know, when it comes to credit cards, but also that feeds into those emergency funds and how people can actually enforce better plans in place so that they aren't always financially, you know, strained. You do have something you can pull on, you know, in the case of an emergency. Ending off talking about probably one of the most important discussions when it comes to saving and investing, and that is around retirement planning. And throughout, one of the big things that Adrian is advocating for is to have professionals actually helping you to actually understand what's happening and to advise on how you can actually put better habits into place and how you do save and invest for the future. So that's been it. It has been a great discussion focusing on New Year's resolutions for your financial well-being, sponsored by PSG Wealth. And thank you so much to our guest. That was the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. That is Adrian Pask. Adrian, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Madhu. I appreciate the time. And hopefully the listeners can find a resolution in there, maybe one or two that they can follow this year and help them.
So I've been your host, Mbuliwa Kabaza, of the Business Day and Financial Mail. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on iono.fm, Spotify, Play.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.